Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Back Chat. I'm Amy. This is my wife, Maggie. Hello. And together we are Thinkathema. This is the series where we count down our top 10 campaigns for the last fortnight, last 2 weeks. And those are generally a mixture of Game Found and Kickstarter campaigns. Mm-hmm. So make sure you check out the links below to find exactly where you can find those games. But this fortnight was quite an interesting one. Lots of different games, quite a wide variety of games you'll see in our list for this episode. I'll spoil a little bit and say there was quite a bit of RPG action that's been going on lately.
Yes. Very unusual for us. Yeah.
And then, of course, a lot of classic Euros. I feel like there's a lot of things that are tempting me to back. And if you remember back at the start of the year, I did make a New Year's resolution to be more fiscally responsible.
Yes.
And the last few weeks have been quite expensive.
Been challenging to that resolution.
They have been very challenging.
Testing, some would say.
And some of that is to do with the campaigns, but some
failing miserably with the resolution, some would say.
Some of it is also that I look at these campaigns and they remind me of other things that I wanted to buy, like previous things that...
Oh, no.
I know. So it's not even the campaigns themselves that are causing danger. For example, there is a campaign that is on at the moment that and we've never played it.
No, we haven't.
But we've been recommended it many times. People have said that they think that I would like it in particular. Mm. Apparently it's quite punishing, very competitive, directly competitive, as a lot of those train games are and those route building kind of games are.
Yeah.
So
it's been brought up a couple of times when we've been playing Maglev Metro.
It has been brought up when we've been playing.
They've been comparing it to that one. So
So I was looking at the campaign for this and thought, well, maybe I should just back the base game. We'll get the base game and the expansions all at once. Mm. And then I looked it up on retail and it's pretty well priced. There was a sale on, so I thought I'd buy it. So I didn't back the campaign, but I did buy the game from retail as a result of seeing the campaign.
You're cheating on the campaign, essentially. Gone around the back of the campaign.
I have. But, all goes back to the publisher eventually. Yes. But the expansion campaign, less interesting only because it's just additional maps and we don't know how the game actually plays yet. And so
not invested in it yet to be like, more content, more. Yeah.
So it's not in our top 10, but go and check that out if you are interested or you own the base game. But now let's get stuck into our top 10.
All right. Our number 10 is a game called Citrus. Now, this is actually coming from an Australian team, Australian designer.
Melbourne-based designer. First-time designer, yes. Sean Lee.
Yeah. And so in Citrus, we find ourselves in this cyberpunk dystopian future where we have, it's actually a strategy game, Pillars 1 to 5, and we find ourselves in as the leader of a part of the rebellion. We're sort of in this place where the elites live quite literally levels up above us, and all their trash and all of the, it just sort of comes down to the underbelly, the underworld where we live. And so we're trying to crawl our way up to a better life. And the way we're going to do that is in a worker placement way, going to different locations and working with the four different factions that kind of run the underworld. And they're going to give you different benefits. The interesting thing with this is there's quite a few things going on, because as you're going and you're kind of doing those worker placement actions, you're getting some of those benefits. But one of the things that you can do is also accomplish missions or complete missions for those different groups. Those are going to be giving you cards that then expand your own kind of player board or your player abilities. They give you ongoing advantages, either in the form of discounts or even in the form of benefits when other players are using those different factions.
I really like the way the upgrades work, actually, with the way that you build out the cards in front of you. It's quite cool how they all connect together.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I really like the element of the area control. So the board that's in the center, the hexes that are in the center, and the way that you have to sacrifice your pieces to move them up those different layers, which is very reminiscent of that, you know, that structure that's part of this game is very reminiscent of the Everdell tree,
yeah, the Everdell
which
tree.
Apparently was his inspiration for that. But I like the way that in order to build the towers in the area control game, you've got to move your pieces away, which then kind of detracts away from your area control points in the game. So there were a lot of things that I think I was watching the Rado's review talking through the mechanics and just how many different mechanics there are.
Yeah.
Like, it seems like a really interesting combination of things.
Yeah. I love the actual physical escalation as you're kind of building those towers, allowing you to go into those higher levels where those elites are, and even making deals along the way with them. There's also quite a lot of story. So there's like additional content, even narrated content. So the world that's been created is actually quite rich. So there's full lore and you can kind of get lost in all of that, even to the point of customizing your own RPG if you so choose. I think that's probably going a little bit too far for me. I'm more interested at this stage in the sort of the strategy, more Euro-y kind of version of the game.
Competitive Euro elements.
Yes. But I love that there's that possibility of that. There's a lot of different mission packs as well that expand the story and bring in a lot of story. So I think, that would add a lot more replayability and a lot more to explore.
Yeah. So Sean, the designer, was actually a fiction writer who writes about cyberpunk kind of stories or lore. We still call it lore?
I think so.
Was that restricted to fantasy? Anyway, so Sean was an author, but now what's really interesting, I think, about this campaign is you don't often see the Euro and RPG elements together. And if you look at the different pledge levels for this campaign, you can get in and just get the base game, which is the Euro elements, the core board strategy game elements, or you can back at a higher level and get access to this additional narrative element, which brings in those RPG kind of aspects, the storytelling. And if you want to experience the game that way, well, then they're enabling that to happen as well.
Which my understanding is it doesn't change the actual structure, the gameplay itself, but it just obviously adds new layers of narrative.
For us, I'm not sure if it's a theme that we'll be able to get into. We do like the kind of those dystopian themes, generally speaking. But for this one, there's a few things going on. I'm interested to try it out. Happy to see that the designer's actually here in Melbourne. So maybe we'll get an opportunity to try a prototype at some point and then have a more informed view. At this stage, we're not backing it, but it is our number 10. So go and check that out. That is Citrus. And number 9 is a game called Dreamers, which is the next game from Yosef Fahi, who is the designer of the Alone Edition games, which tend to be small box solo games that we've covered and talked about a little bit in the channel before. One game that I actually really love, I'm not a fan of solo games, is a little game called The Road, which I believe is quite hard to find in English at the moment. Hopefully they'll do a reprint of that at some stage. One that we covered on Backchat previously is called The Spirit of Eden. And so this game is interesting because for a change, this game is a two-player game. And this two-player small box game is the idea behind it, the theme, bear with me, is that you have... It's something to do with magic.
Well, no, it's dreams. So you're dreams. Dream wars. You're stuck in a dream.
Well, it's called Dreamers.
Yeah. You're stuck in a dream and you need to find these three portals to get out of the dream or out of this, the nightmare.
Yes, but you miss the trick is that you've come face to face with your doppelganger. And so you don't know whether your doppelganger is there to help you or hinder you. And of course, in the game, that person is your opponent. But what's interesting is that this game can either be cooperative or competitive, depending on the secret identity card that you draw at the beginning of the game, which means that either you're both going to be trying to access these magic portals and open all three of them and therefore win the game, or someone is going to be the master of nightmares. Master of nightmares and be working against you.
Like sabotage.
It reminds us a little bit of the game Mantis Falls, and because that is a two-player game where you don't know if you're working together or not. But this game works quite differently mechanically because this game is all about really it's all about mathematics. It's quite abstract, but the way that this game works is you're going to be drawing a card that gives you a target number, and that target number is what you need to unlock one of those magic portals. You're both going to be playing a card out of your hand, but the first person who plays the card out of their hand is just going to give one clue about whether it is close to or far away from the number that you're trying to land on.
Yeah.
So for example, if the number was 12 and you played a 10, you might say it's very close to that number, so that your opponent or partner, depending on what card they've played, is now attempting to either sabotage by going bust or playing a card that is going to help you get to that sum of 12. So if you played a 2, both cards would be revealed, we'd have a sum of 12 and we'd be able to open the magic portal. But there's an extra layer to that in that there are cards that can actually adjust the value of the cards that are played. And so there is a bit more strategy there. And in terms of how you're going to play, if you're the master of nightmares, obviously you're trying to sabotage but not give yourself away. So you might help a little bit but not quite have the right cards every time.
Yeah.
So it's a really interesting concept. I absolutely love Yosef's designs. I think they're
very
really
clever, actually.
Really clever, really intricate for what can be fit in a tiny box, which is really cool. This one though, I was a little like, it felt quite abstract. It felt quite mathematical, and also we don't love as much bluffing games, and so this one's
hidden
probably,
roll games.
A little bit lower in our estimation maybe than other games in terms of our excitement level, but it's still on our list because at some point I would love to check this out. It is our number 9, Dreamers. Our number 8 is a game called Butterfly Garden Duel. So this is a remix, if you will, of a game by Steve Finn, who we love as a designer.
Yeah.
Of course, made one of my favorite games, Biblios, or favorite small box games.
Yeah.
I really enjoy that game. Yeah. But many other games that we've enjoyed recently, Mining Colony as well, which was also made into this dual roll and write format. So this campaign is actually a print and play. So there's no physical game. It is being turned into, is taking the game Butterfly Garden, which was a fairly simple,
very light. I quite enjoyed it. We actually covered it and I really enjoyed it.
We did cover it. And we still own it. And it is a very light game though. But taking the core concepts from that, which really are around kind of set collection and the tension with turn order, that has been now translated into a roll and write, which I find really interesting. And actually, roll and write, that, well, Steve Finn is calling this a bring your own pencil game because there is no rolling and there's no flipping. The way that the game
it's just writing.
It's
a write,
a writing style game. But what's interesting about this game is it's two players only, and in the center you have essentially a garden that has a lot of butterflies in it, as well as jars that you'll be able to collect butterflies in. And the way the game works in terms of being able to randomize the order in which things occur, instead of having a dice or flipping a card, at the beginning of the game you simply write, I think it's the numbers 1 to 8 at the top of the main player sheet, and you write them in any order, which is basically randomizing the options that are going to be available to you, just like shuffling the deck. And then you're going to play it out in the order 1 to 8, with the first player being able to choose from 2 available options first, and then the second player having to take the alternative option. But what's really interesting in this game is the way that the first player plays out, in that you're trying to you're basically drafting one of two actions, and one's related with a low number and one's related to a high number. And if you get the high number option, you're going to be able to do more things. You're going to get more butterflies, which is going to help you get more victory points. But it's the lower number that's going to help you go first in a future round. And so you need to kind of know when to sacrifice collecting some butterflies in order to have the first pick of the next set.
Have that balance.
So you're kind of
too greedy.
Exactly. Yeah. So you kind of have to look ahead a little bit. The game is actually quite simple in what you're doing, because then you are choosing based on your choice. You are going to be allocated certain areas in the garden that you can choose butterflies from, and then you're going to be picking the butterflies or the jars within. The jars get circled on your player board, and then you have an objective to fill it with the right amount of butterflies of the right color. Mm-hmm. And so you'll then be on your hunt for finding those butterflies. And that, well, at that point I was like, okay, that sounds pretty straightforward. Mm-hmm. But I think the scoring conditions make it a little bit interesting actually, because there's an element of joining as many butterflies together as you can, having the longest path. Yeah. And then there's an element of area majority, which is also really interesting because the areas only score if all butterflies have actually been taken from that area, which means if your opponent has covered a lot of ground in an area, you might not want to close that off for them by finishing off and taking the last butterfly. So there's a little bit more than meets the eye with this game, and it's one that it feels like a bit of a no-brainer to back. I will be backing this one, so you can add a stamp. So it will be $5 Australian or $5 US or $7 Australian to back. And obviously it's a print and play, so you need to print them yourself.
Yeah.
But I just think it's really cool that you could print this, take three pieces of paper with you, and if you're on a plane or a train or wherever you're at work, you just pull out and all you need are the pens. You don't need to be rolling any dice or anything like that. And that's a really cool concept, and love seeing all of the print and play games that are really coming through at the moment, especially in the roll and write space.
Yeah.
So that is our number 8, Butterfly Garden Jewel.
Our number 7 is a set of games called Little Box Journeys by Story Brewers. Now, this is one of those RPG venturing things that we were talking about, that we were alluding to. I have started to explore the sort of RPG world, knowing that I kind of struggle to, like, you know, we're not really RPG people. So I started to look at, you know, what things that I could play solo. And also knowing that I don't really tend to love a lot of the classic, just, you know, just fantasy or magic or things that are kind of that. Those themes. So I've been looking at different themes, like what are the other themes that happen? And I had come across some of the RPGs by this company. I hadn't realized they're actually a really lovely people, Sydney based, so another Aussie team. And they create these beautiful little RPGs that are what I think they're called. It's like ready to play kind of thing. It's like a one shot. So you don't have to kind of learn complicated rule sets. You can just take it out of the box and start playing straight away. You don't necessarily even need a game master. Mm-hmm. So very, very easy, user friendly. This particular campaign has two games, but then you can also add some of the previous releases. So the two games, one is called Decaying Orbit. So this one I'm a bit less interested in because it's in space. But it's an interesting concept. So in Decaying Orbit, it's kind of like you're solving the mystery of what led to the demise of this, I guess it's like a space station. And the thing that you have to go by are the leftover memories of the AI, but they're a bit like the memories that are left are corrupted. So you're kind of trying to decipher, you know, what went down, what happened. So that's kind of interesting. The other title is Saltfish and Almanacs, which looks so adorable. So this one, you're actually traveling merchants, but it's not just about, you know, there's you're kind of going through the seasons and going through a journey trading different, you know, different goods and wares. But it's also got this layer of, it's a journey of self-discovery. So you're kind of going through a personal transformation of sorts with your character. And I absolutely love that. And even just the graphic design, I find also really, really appealing. So those are the two that are part of this campaign. You can add some of the previous ones, which one of them really caught my eye, which is called Our Mundane Supernatural Life. And it's got the cutest cover I've ever seen. And so this is kind of spending a day in the life of you as a supernatural character, and you're spending that day with your loved one, you know, whoever your loved one may be. And so you're kind of planning all the activities and things that you're going to. So it's a celebration of the little kind of simple things in life or the little mundane moments that can kind of pack a lot of meaning in them. Another really beautiful title is one called Village Song. And Village Song is actually about the folk tales of Southeast Asian cultures. And so it's been done very, very carefully with one V, who's one of the, who's the designer of this one, is from that region. And also they engage, I love the term that they use, because they didn't say cultural consultants. It's more of a authenticity editors. So people who actually are from those regions, who have a good thorough understanding, as well as, you know, being designed by someone who's from there. So the beautiful story around, you know, this sort of village, how the leadership and the story that this village gets to shape as the decisions are being made for, you know, as the village grows and as, you know, different characters kind of encounter one another. So these are RPGs that I'm now really interested to explore, particularly because, yeah, a lot of them have a solo mode, and they've been very, very good and created, you know, lots of videos and even demos of, you know, how the scenarios can play out. So yeah, I've been very impressed with how much care has gone into, yeah, the creation of these, and the artwork in all of them is just so beautiful. So I'm very, I'm very keen to check this out. They are
very beautiful. Yeah. Obviously, not for me. I'm not the themer in the relationship. Mm. So the lack of the board game component or the mechanics, if you will, is still making it quite hard for me to like take the plunge into RPG. But luckily, a lot of these games play solo. So Maggie's got a lot of RPG time up ahead, and I've got a lot of, I guess, hanging out by myself time. Yeah. But what I really appreciate about this campaign is if you look at the pledge levels, you will see that there is a pledge level for people who are having or experiencing financial hardship. It is based on an honor system to select that option, which gives you the games at a significant discount, which I just thought was such a beautiful thing to do.
Yeah.
And more beautiful than that is that people don't appear to be taking too much advantage of that, because there are a lot of people pledging at the full price. And just what a wonderful thing. But also if you buy a second one, I think it comes down a little bit in cost if you buy both of them, but that's the one that you're particularly interested in, isn't it? So we'll probably be backing that one, but that is our number 7, Little Box Journeys. Now I'm going to go a little bit left field for our number 6. Our number 6 is a game called Mushroom Cats. Now, I don't know what it is, but I am so excited about this game. Like, weirdly excited. You know, when you just see something, you're like, I just have to have that in my collection.
Just resonated with it. You're just connected. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was all about the artwork. So this is a small card game. And the idea behind this card game is mushroom foraging mixed with cats. So
stealing your mushrooms.
All of the artwork is cats with different types or different varietals of mushrooms. Mm-hmm. And if you watch the channel, you will know that we have gone through a little bit of a mushroom foraging stage.
Yes.
It's actually mushroom foraging season here in Melbourne.
It is.
And at this time of year, it's really cool because not too far away from where we live, there are a lot of pine trees. And after it rains, if you go out there early in the morning, because otherwise everyone else gets them, there's a lot of pine mushrooms everywhere, which are a beautiful gourmet mushroom that we like to cook with. So that's been a fun little discovery of ours. And then when I saw saw this game, it was just so amazing to see all the different types of mushrooms beautifully represented. And then on top of that, these adorable cats that are like also foraging or like hiding amongst all the mushrooms.
I love their eyes. Some of them look like they're a little bit, you know, like they maybe ate some mushrooms that they shouldn't have, but that weren't cat friendly.
Yeah. And it definitely seems like a passion project. The artist is the one who's also doing the campaign as well. The artist is goes by Paper Puffins is the brand. And they obviously have a lot of merchandise. So you can go and check out their store, which has a lot of like cat things, mushroom things, combined cat and mushroom things.
Your favorite. I love a hybrid. Yeah, yeah.
I really do. So the combination of these things just got me really excited. The gameplay is fairly simple. It's a drafting game, or as they call it in the campaign, kind of pick and pass. Mm-hmm. But what you're doing is you will start with a hand of cards that have these different cats depicted on them. And these cats are going to allow you to do kind of a set collection exercise where you want to differentiate the mushrooms that you have down in your tableau. But the way that it works is that everybody picks a card at the same time and you all play that down simultaneously. And the tension is whether you add another cat to your tableau or you opt for the cards in there that are not so nice, where you get to steal from other people's tableau. And I believe you can, you know, deal a death cap mushroom, which obviously you want to have, you want to have the antidote for. So there's a little bit of like quite a lot of interactivity in this game, and it just seems like a really light, fun style card game. One that you wouldn't be probably the heart of game night, but it might be something that you start with, warm people up, or if it's just like one of those days where you can't be bothered going and getting a board game down and doing a teach, just one of those ones that you always know the rule set for, so those non-gamers in your life can have a bit of fun as well.
For me, this one was just like an aesthetics one, like just for the pure aesthetics of
purely
it,
for the aesthetics.
Just
the
joy of looking at those
I love
cards.
The cards so much and the artwork so much. So I said to Maggie, like, this is a game I would just buy and sleeve. And if you, again, if you watch the channel, you know that we don't sleeve anything, even though we should
and I would really love to. We just never get around to it. We're irresponsible.
We're always just buying new games instead of taking care of the other games, which we need to do. But they're beautiful, like tarot sized cards, and I just love them. Now, to the disappointing part, after I've maybe made other people excited about this, they are not shipping to Australia.
Uh-oh.
Which, you know, as a small publisher, you know, this artist doing something different, you can imagine that it's quite hard to distribute around the world, but it is devastating. And so I'm actually thinking I will probably contact them, work out if I can get it sent to a US address or something like that, because it is just too cute to pass us by. That is our number six, mostly driven by me, Mushroom Cats.
And number five is a game called Extravaganza.
Extravaganza.
Which is
Eleganza.
Eleganza, Extravaganza, just Extravaganza. This is actually a game about drag queens. So you're going to be playing as a drag queen, trying to be the most legendary drag queen by competing in a, you know, very RuPaul's Drag Race-like without infringing on copyright.
Yeah. Without saying that in the campaign.
Yeah, yeah.
That's very much what it feels
like. Like an homage to that format, let's say. So you're competing in a drag race, and you're going to be doing that like the way that drag queens do. So you're going to try and dance and lip sync your way to the top. Tens across the board. The way the game actually plays out is you're going to have your drag queens. You get to choose from a range of different drag queen icons or characters. And you're going to be on the stage and you're going to move like a queen moves, like a chess queen moves. And you're going to be able to then collect. So you decide what your end point is going to be. And there's going to be rhinestones all over the dance floor. And you're going to decide, well, wherever you land, whatever color rhinestone that is, you get to collect every other color, every other rhinestone along that path that match that same color. And essentially that's going to become your currency. So that's what you're going to use to use pairs of that to pay for other cards that then are essentially your dance moves. When you get to sort of play those cards, you're going to also, there's a lot of it is around combinations of icons. they'll allow you to get lips, and the lips you can use to spend to get lyrics that then mm-hmm. you can lip sync to, which mm-hmm. then those lyrics become kind of like a set collection because they're all different colors. And mm-hmm. yeah, so it's sort of like a way of getting a little bit of points from different areas. Ultimately, obviously, whoever ends up having the most points is going to win.
This design is actually by Aaron Van Der Beek, who is the designer of Castell, which is a game that we have never played. No. And it's just one of those games that everybody recommends to us, yeah. and we just haven't had a chance to play it. So, but it, you know, by all accounts, it's a great game. And so that makes me think that this is not just, you know, like the kind of relying only on the theme, mm-hmm. shall yeah. we say.
Which we love because we
love the theme.
Drag Race.
Huge,
fans.
Huge yeah. RuPaul's Drag Race mm-hmm. fans, because a group of our friends and us get together for a dinner every week where we watch an episode together at someone else's house. And so it's just been many years of enjoying that show, and yeah. it reminds us of all of those warm feelings.
And there's a lot of the catchphrases and the terms that are there, yeah. which are now sort of part of drag culture,
yeah.
as part of the cards and as part of the game, which yes. is going to be really cool to play with those friends as well.
Yeah, and so, but what I want to say about that is that they actually engage a drag queen who helped and consulted on this project and did a lot of the writing for the project, which is fabulous, obviously, yeah. for something that is so entrenched in a particular culture, yeah. to be very respectful of, you know, who owns that culture. And I just thought that it's been done in a really tasteful way, but there's also lots of very cool nods if you do watch RuPaul's Drag Race. There's a lot of like or if you're familiar with kind of the drag
yeah,
scene
drag culture,
and
yeah,
yeah then there are a lot of cool things in there. One of my favorite things is the purse first player
yeah,
token.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed that. And I'm really enjoying the campaign as well with the reveals and all of the drama that you get from the show yeah. as well as kind of being replicated in the campaign. Yeah. I really enjoy that. In terms of whether we're backing it, unfortunately, the shipping is a little high to Australia. It's $37 to Australia, which makes the game, it pushes the game over $100, which is quite expensive for a light style game. That doesn't mean that we're not backing it, but at the moment we're just thinking about it because, as Maggie mentioned, I feel like this game will get a lot of table time
with our
friends.
They would
because,
love this.
Yeah, they would absolutely enjoy it and all of the references.
Yeah.
But for now we haven't, but we'll see how we go. That is our number 5.
Extravaganza. And number 4 is the game Wayfarers of the South Tigris, which is the first game of the new trilogy by Garfield Games. So this is another competitive strategy game. It's going to play 1 to 4 players, and it takes place in medieval Baghdad, where we are explorers exploring and trying to map the land, map the sea, and map the stars to report our findings back to the House of Wisdom. Now, the way we're going to be doing this is quite interestingly dice worker placement. So every player is going to have their own little board with your almost like your guide of what are the different actions that you can take depending on the value of your dice. That little board can actually be upgraded throughout the game. So there's going to be these little tiles that you're going to be able to collect and enhance the options that you're going to have access to. Then what you're going to be doing is obviously doing things like collecting resources and bringing, as you're charting the land and the sea, you're going to be getting cards that start creating a tableau of the land to your left. So all these cards get added to your left, which beautifully sort of visually create that land. To the right, you start adding any of the cards that are mapping the seas. And then anything about the stars gets added on top. So you have this beautiful, like it's a proper visual tableau that you're creating where things at the top will usually be referring to end game points or mm-hmm. conditions like that, but the things at the bottom will be giving you, again, additional engine building type abilities, either abilities along the way. There's also characters that you can recruit and put underneath certain cards if they're matching the right symbols to, again, kind of enhance your actions along the way.
I really like the branchingness of the board in the center that you're moving along as well. I always like to see those kind of
the progress that you're making
and the choices that you're making along the way. Now, the previous trilogy from Garfield Games, so the West Kingdom series, Architects, it's no secret that we really enjoy that game. Really enjoy that game. And I, what I love about that game is it has so much interactivity between players, whereas Paladins, I think, was the most recent one that we've played, and that one was much more multiplayer solitaire, but I really like that it is quite a brain burner. So I was interested to see where they were going to take this next trilogy.
Yeah.
And this game, you know, I watched Kovray's early review of this game that's part of the campaign, so go and check that out. And they were talking about this game having quite a few elements of interactivity between players, like the ability to, I think you add influence to a card, and then that means that when someone else uses it, you get to benefit from that ongoingly.
Right. Yeah.
I also really enjoy like the artwork of this game. I really enjoy that you're building out like the scenery.
Yeah, it looks really beautiful. Yeah. The actual tableau that you're building. Yeah.
Yeah, and obviously there are a lot of fans of the Miko art, and so we see that again here. Really beautiful box art as well. But yeah, I also wanted to mention that it's really nice to see like a diverse range of characters. Obviously, there's a lot of like Islamic culture being represented here. I wish there was a little bit more about that in the campaign, just in terms of the setting of the game, education around the setting of the game, and any kind of cultural consultants that were involved with the game as well. You know, that's just something that we want to see more and more happening in the board game community, because I don't know a lot about this area in Baghdad and the Tigris, and it would just be lovely to be able to learn a bit more from the campaign itself and the game. Now, what's interesting about Garfield Games and their campaigns is that they try to discourage people from getting too swept up in the Kickstarter fever. They're a little bit more like, well, back it if you like, don't back it if you like. Either way, it's fine if you want to buy it in retail. They do offer like a promo pack of cards if you want to back it now. But for us, because I've had like just personally a mixed experience with the previous trilogy in terms of my preferences, I'd really like to kind of get this game to the table because it's so popular. I have no doubt that I'll be able to play this game sometime.
Try someone else's copy first.
Yep. Try it out and have a go, and then maybe pick it up at retail. But if you are looking to pick it up in the campaign, the price point is just so compelling. I think at $45 US, it's not an expensive game, and these games do tend to be quite a a great solid experience that a lot of people enjoy. So I can see this would be a no-brainer for a lot of people. And that is our number four, Wayfarers of the South Tigris.
Our number three is a game called Oranienburger Canal. So this is actually by a famed designer, Uwe Rosenberg, and in this game, it's actually a 1-2 player game. So not the, you know, bigger experiences.
Harking back to like Fields of Arles.
Yeah. So in this game, we're going to be, well, it's got a couple of like interesting little things going on. We're going to be building or helping create this, the buildings around the canal. So it's a worker placement, classic worker placement game. You're going to be placing your worker discs on these actions in the middle that will give you different resources that you track on this pretty cool little, what do you call it? Like a wheel?
Dial?
Yeah, it's like a wheel with a dial track. And we'll talk about, you know, what it does a little bit later as well. But with other resources, you're going to be buying cards, which are representing different structures that you're going to be building on your, you know, on your kind of player area. Those cards themselves, or those buildings themselves, will have points at the end, but then they also will either give you resources or other benefits based on adjacencies to either, you know, if they're next to water or next to a bridge or next to a path. And those are the other things that you're also going to be building, as part of your player area. Ultimately, by the end of the game, obviously, it's one of those efficiency engines or efficiency games where whoever managed to optimize their area will win. The interesting thing with this is that little dial with those resources is as you're, you know, moving resources up or moving them down based on when you're winning them or gaining them or spending them, there's the opportunity to move this this dial that actually shifts the amounts depending on which side of the arrows your resources are. So for example, your resources might be on the side that as the arrow moves left, they become less. So let's say that I had a resource at level 3. So now if that arrow moves down, that's now going to be 2. However, everything that's on top on the other side of that arrow is going to be going up. So you might want to then make sure that the resources that are more valuable, you have up there, because now all of a sudden you're going to be magically multiplying all those resources by one or whatever number is. So I think that's an interesting little puzzle within, you know, the broader puzzle that I know there's an element of that or a similar kind of wheel in Glass Road, which we have, but I haven't actually
opened yet. A couple of his older games, actually. But yeah. I feel like he is maybe trying something new here. Mm-hmm. So this feels like maybe a very stripped back version of what ultimately might become an even bigger experience. Because for me, this game is a little theme light.
It's very dry.
Extremely dry. Yeah. And we do like a dry Euro, but this is dry. Like you are making a canal out of cards and paths, using a dial to do so. This is classic Euro territory. Yeah. I'm of course interested because it is Uwe and I always enjoy like his new takes on things. Mm. You know what I'm not enjoying? The use of a disc as a worker. Like that was in Hallertau.
Yeah.
And that was the one thing I was like, why didn't you had like shaped meeples for everything
Hallertau we used, was that little cubes? It's little cubes.
Oh, cubes. Yes. Or cubes discs. Yeah. It's like, why not just have little meeples?
Well, completely shapeless. Meeples. No, it's just indicative. It's indicative.
Yeah. Use your imagination. Yeah. I don't have one, so. Yeah. And it shouldn't matter to me, but it is definitely a dry theme. It's very straightforward, but it does feel like mechanically it could be quite interesting, always with the tension of trying to get resources. Yeah. I like the way that your tableau is triggered, like actions are triggered based on your next placement of things. Mm. So you've got to think about the order in which you're doing things. Yeah. I would like to try this game, but unfortunately, it's being published by Spielworks, which is not the unfortunate part. They do, but they have trouble shipping to Australia, which means there's not any details yet about how to get it in Australia. Generally, you can get it through the retailer Behold Games, so they will do some kind of retailer publisher arrangement where they import a lot of games, in so that we can access them. But for the moment, the price hasn't been announced on that. I don't think. So keep an eye on that if you are in Australia. But if you're elsewhere, then check out this new Uwe Rosenberg game, because my fear is that if I don't get it through one of these means, we haven't, obviously we're unable to back it at the moment, but Spielworks designed and games tend to be a little hard to find after the fact. So I've tried to pick up games later and they can be very difficult to find. So if you are an Uwe fan, it might be worth checking that out now.
Yeah. So that is our number three, Oranienburger Canal.
Our number two is a game called Flip Town. And in Flip Town, you're going to be exploring a town in the Wild West. And the way that you're going to be doing that is through a flip and write game. Yep, that's right. I went straight back to mechanics. I tried with the theme. but this game is by Stephen Aramini, who is actually the designer of Sprawlopolis, Circle the Wagons, and a game that I learned recently at Dice Tower West, which was Animal Kingdoms, which was taught to me by Monique and Naveen in person. We love Monique and Naveen. And also I got to play it with Dwayne from Blackboard Gaming, who we love Dwayne as well. So I have very warm memories of that game, playing with all those amazing people. But let's talk about this game. This game is a flip and write game, which is really interesting because it's played with a regular deck of cards. Now, that deck of cards comes with the game. You don't have to bring your own deck of cards, and it's suitably themed with the game. But what you're going to be doing each turn is dealing out three cards from the deck, and those are shown on the table. And what you have to decide is one of those cards needs to be used for its suit. Mm-hmm. So you might choose a hearts card, and then that gives you access to the hearts part of your player board or your player sheet, I should say, which means that's the section that you have access to. You then get to choose one of the two remaining cards to use for its number, and that's going to dictate the action that you get to take within that section of your player sheet. Mm. And the final card that you've saved is going to be placed on part of your player board where you're going to be trying to create a poker hand. Mm. So you're going to try and make poker runs to have full house or a straight or whatever it might be, to have the most powerful hand of cards, which is also going to get you points at the end of the game. And the game is played over three rounds. And I don't know, I just found that really compelling, the combination of regular playing cards with this idea of like poker.
Mm-hmm.
And then also like what we're more used to, which is that classic flip and right game where you're getting combos.
Yeah, lots of combos. One thing opens up something else somewhere else and it allows you to get you more points over here, or then it means that this part of the board works a little bit differently. I really enjoy that.
Yeah. So I am actually quite excited about this game. I really do enjoy roll and writes, and this just looks like one that has enough of a twist to it to be really interesting from a very well-known and respected designer. Mm. So I'm excited about that. Now, the game is $25, which is quite reasonable. With postage to Australia, I think it's about $61 all up delivered to Australia, which is kind of at that top end of what I want to be paying for a roll and write.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty confident that this is going to be a good one. So I am backing this game. Yeah. Pretty excited about it. That is our number two this fortnight, Flip Town.
And our number one game for this episode is a game called Through Ice and Snow. Now, this game takes place in the 19th century, where we are on an expedition to find the elusive Northwest trading route through the Arctics. So we're going to be helming a ship. We're going to be part of a fleet. So it's like a semi-cooperative, but ultimately competitive game.
Yeah.
And so we're going to be exploring the land, mapping the different species that we find across the way, fighting or battling or making sure that we survive through the very, very harsh conditions of the very, very cold, wintry areas that we're traveling through.
It's an interesting game because it has like so many survival elements.
Yes, there's a lot of survival.
That's right. So other games that you like that kind of survival theme, and just like in those games, you're going to have to be feeding everybody.
Yes.
You're going to have to be monitoring their health and morale in this game. But something that I really love about this game is the use of the Inuit workers.
Yes.
Who are
recruiting and teaming up with Inuit.
Exactly. Yeah. You're recruiting. So at the time this apparently happened, and I didn't know a lot about this history, and so it was really interesting to read up about this. But the Inuit people were very pivotal in helping these British explorers come through the Northwest Passage and really helping them survive in these like unknown, very treacherous lands. And so in the game, that is really built into the mechanics, because you can recruit these Inuit workers who then you can use to take actions in any part of the board in a much more unrestricted way than the other workers that are available to you. So they're much more powerful. And they've been included in a really thoughtful way. If you go to the page, you can see that the publisher worked really closely with the Inuit Heritage Fund. And apparently they also paid and worked with some elders, some Inuit elders. And also they worked very closely with the Canadian Museum of History. And so a lot of thought has been put into this theme. And it's really beautiful to kind of see, you know, to feel like you're able to get the help of the people who understand and know the lands the best. But what it seems like is that it's going to be very, very difficult for
to
make it through this Northwest Passage and to survive. And it is really interesting, the combination of mechanics. There's, of course, worker placement, the heart of the game, which is one of our favorite mechanics. But also you're going to be able to upgrade your sled and upgrade your ship as well. And ultimately it is a little bit semi-co-op, because no ship can get left behind, because then you end up
together in a way.
Because otherwise you end up having to tow other people's ships along with you. And so you kind of need to be looking out for each other. If one ship is dropping food because you can't carry all of your food, then the next ship can pick that up and use that food. So there is like a symbiosis between the players in the game, but ultimately there is one winner. And by listening to some reviews, it seemed like that the worker placement is a very tight type of worker placement, which I also adore. Like, I love a punishing.
Yeah, you like the tension.
The punishing kind of game experience. And survival games often tend to be cooperative. That, you know, when they're survival theme, because you're generally working together to survive. In this case, you're like, nah, see ya.
Only one survivor. No, you are still,
One ultimate survivor.
No, it's not one ultimate survivor. It's like the most prestigious explorer by the end of of it. Because
I'm just joking.
That's what I was saying. Like, you're going to be obviously like kind of documenting species along the way, but then you're also going to be charting the territory as you go. And then there's so many different ways of getting points, and that's one of the things that I always enjoy in games where you have all sorts of different paths to potential victory. I also love that, you know, you are going in a fleet. So even though you're kind of in charge of your own ship, whoever ends up being the leader of that particular round gets to kind of dictate if you're going close along the shore, which means that then you can do some of that mapping. And then also the type of event that you get, which is essentially the elements fighting back or the treacherousness that you're encountering is different based on whether you're close to the shore or which takes more fuel, interestingly, get to progress, or if you're going sort of deeper sea, which means that you get to go faster, but then you're encountering deep sea issues or events. So I quite enjoy that aspect.
And I love
an
event in a game.
You do love an event.
I do.
Yeah,
and so
everyone's impacted and affected by this one thing. You're like, what
yeah,
is it?
So I think it just, if you think about the things that are in this game, there's a good combination of, well, think a theme of things. There's...
I also forgot to mention, you are actually quite literally exploring the map. So it's sort of revealing as
and it's
you're
a modular,
it. Yeah,
modular
and it's a modular board.
Board
so there's obviously it brings in a lot of new experiences every time you play the game. That's pretty cool too.
So there is lots to love about this game in theory. We obviously haven't played it, but there are things that really appeal to me and things that really appeal to Maggie, and that's how it's made it to our number one of this fortnight. In terms of pledge options, there are two main options. Most people are backing it at the level where you get the expansion that's included, which I believe introduces a bit of Inuit folklore, so it has more of a kind of mysterious and fantastical elements maybe brought into it. At this stage I have backed it, so we've backed it, but I've only backed it the base game because I am trying to be fiscally responsible, and because we unfortunately very rarely make it to expansions these days. But if this is something that interests you, go and check it out. It is our number one of this fortnight, Through Ice and Snow. So that's our top 10 for this fortnight. If you enjoyed this video, please like and subscribe to the channel if you haven't already. It really helps us. We love putting together this video for you every fortnight. And we also love hearing what you're backing. So please drop us a comment below and tell us what out of this very diverse range of games that have popped up on Kickstarter and GameFound this fortnight, did you back? Where are your funds going? And how are you saving money? Because I'm finding it very difficult. We are backing more than I anticipate every episode. Anyway, we will be back with more board game content soon, but otherwise have a wonderful week ahead and bye for now.
Bye.